From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Barbara Slavin, Acting Director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor. Joining me on the show this week are Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. And here are the issues. The House of Representatives narrowly passed a health care bill aimed at revising former President Obama's signature domestic achievement. The legislation faces an uncertain future in the Senate and will likely be a major issue in 2018 midterm elections. FBI Director James Comey defended his decision to notify Congress that he was reopening an investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. Clinton has charged that Comey's action, 11 days before the elections, cost her the presidency. Russia, Turkey, and Iran announced that they'd agreed to create de-escalation zones in Syria in the latest effort to try to reduce the scale of carnage in that six-year-old war. And finally, the people of France will make a fateful decision on Sunday whether to elect a pro-European young economist as president or an anti-EU nationalist. Tom, let's start with health care. This has been dramatic ever since the first attempts to pass the so-called repeal and replace. The House finally did it by the narrowest of margins. But people don't seem to be very happy with the product. What was it and what's going to happen to it?
Well, it now has to go to the Senate, Barbara, where even Republican senators have said, don't hold your breath. We're going to write our own bill and it's going to be very different from this one. I think this was a political posturing event. The Republicans are desperate to be able to fulfill their promise for the last 9 years, 7 years, of repealing and replacing Obamacare. And this vote can be, whatever you think of the merits, this vote can be construed as the first step in doing that. Now, the real question is how much of this bill will survive in the Senate. It is very controversial. It reduces taxes on the wealthiest Americans. It, despite Republican claims to the contrary, it will knock off coverage for 10 to 20 million Americans who already have it. And it throws into doubt, despite Republican charges of assurances to the contrary, that it will protect people who have pre-existing medical conditions. And so there's going to be a lot of changes, a lot of amending in the Senate, and we will see what happens. It also, I think, was very important for President Trump to finally get a legislative victory. He hadn't had one. And so now we'll have to see whether this is an enduring one, but it is one. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see, but this is going to take months to sort out, I believe.
Yeah, Linda, President Trump had a sort of pep rally afterwards. In the Rose Garden, is it usual to have a celebration when something has passed the House?
This was highly unusual. They were, as we like to say, spiking the football at halftime. The game is far from over. As Tom said, we've got months ahead of us. The Senate is essentially going to start over. But this was just incredibly important for Trump, who's all about public relations and salesmanship, to show his supporters that he can get something through Congress. If he had failed again, it in some ways would have effectively been the end of his presidency, because if he can't work with a Congress that in which both houses are controlled by his party, then what can he do? But a lot of people think it was a mission accomplished moment.
Referring to George W. Bush, who declared mission accomplished very early on in the Iraq War, only to wind up in a very difficult situation in
exactly.
that country.
Right. Exactly.
I think this was all about Trump and not about Republican members of Congress, Barbara, who may come to regret this. I mean, many things will happen between now and November of 2018.
Yes.
And any of those things, the only thing I'm confident is that something will happen and it will affect the elections. But given what we know now, I mean, the math is tricky for Republicans. I believe it's 22 Republican House members who voted for this bill, or most of them voted for this bill, who are in districts that Hillary Clinton won in the last election. The Democrats need to pick up 24 seats in the House to reclaim control of the lower chamber, and no one until recently has thought they had a prayer of doing that. Now, maybe so we'll see. I mean, I believe some Republicans, especially Republicans in these Democratic-leaning districts, could be punished for this vote. But we'll see. We'll see what happens in the Senate.
Depending on what happens. But you can, Linda, you can see the commercials that are going to be made. And one thing that a lot of people were tweeting was a comment by Paul Ryan, who's now the Speaker of the House. He said this in 2009 about Obamacare. I don't think we should pass bills that we haven't read and don't know what they cost. And of course, this particular bill had not yet been, the new one had not been priced out by the Congressional Budget Office. So there are only guesstimates about how much it would cost. And apparently many members had not read the bill. Also interesting, I think, is that there have been no hearings about this iteration of the bill. And Obamacare went through many hearings, yeah?
That's right. It took more than a year from the beginning of Obama's presidency to pass and sign the Affordable Care Act. And so here we're seeing Trump. Trump is in a big hurry. You'll notice that he says quickly a lot.
Yes, he is in a hurry about a lot of things.
And so he wanted to get this done within his first 100 days, and he failed. So he's just outside that margin. But they seem to make a lot of the same mistakes they made the first time, which is to move fast, only go with Republican votes, and have no hearings, and not even wait for the Congressional Budget Office to tell us how much it, you know, the financial impact, and also how many millions of people will lose their coverage. Mm-hmm. So when that number comes out, I think the air will come out of the balloon a little bit as people realize that they could lose their coverage, particularly Trump supporters. I can't wait to
Medicaid
see...
Medicaid expansion, all of those things are on the block.
Yeah? It's very sad to see people who hopefully voted for Trump with hope, thinking that they were going to get something better out of the deal, and to see them realize that they could actually lose their health insurance.
Yeah. Tom, how quick will the Senate be to take this up?
Well, even John Cornyn, who is the deputy majority leader, Senator Cornyn of Texas, has said, this is going to take a while. We're going to take our time. I think you might have a vote at the end of the year, but that's, you know, that's months away. So the Senate Republicans will not make the mistake that House Republicans made, which is to rush it through to be able to claim a coonskin on the wall. Mm-hmm. And Linda is right. I mean, the Congressional Budget Office costed out the original bill that failed in March, and they said 24 million people would lose health coverage under this. Well, the Republicans could say, well, they're always wrong. They always make mistakes. But they did not want to have to wait for the CBO, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, to score this one. But they will. There will be a number. And I don't think that will be good for Republican proponents of this version of health care reform.
I wonder if it'll have an effect on that election in Atlanta. It's coming up, the runoff election, Ossoff versus
It makes the stakes for that race in early June, quite important, and you can be sure that both national parties who have already poured millions of dollars into that race will redouble their efforts, because if the Democrats now win, and the Democrat, a rookie, a novice, came within less than 2 percentage points of avoiding a runoff, if he wins, that's going to be seen as a repudiation of this bill. And if he loses, the Republicans will say, see, this shows that most people support our bill. But so the stakes are suddenly higher on every one of these, plus governor's races in New Jersey and Virginia in November. Every election of this year will take on a larger meaning because of this vote.
Very interesting. Linda, I want to turn to something else that happened on Capitol Hill in the last few days, and that was some really riveting testimony by the director of the FBI. He came to talk once again about the issue of Russians interfering in our elections and why it was that he did not give real information about the FBI investigation into the Trump campaign, but he did, 11 days before the election, tell members of Congress who he knew would leak this information that they were once again looking into Hillary Clinton's emails. Was he convincing in his explanations?
I think it all depends on where you stand. This is one of these political Rorschach tests. If you're a Republican and you're glad that he did this to Hillary Clinton, then it's perfectly justified. And his justification was that he had announced the end of the investigation, and then when he got new emails, he felt obligated to tell Congress that the investigation was back on. And yes, it was very close to the election. Hillary Clinton blames this on her loss. Comey said it made him feel slightly nauseous to think that he might have affected the election.
Oh, now, come on. Yeah, I rolled my eyes when I heard him say
usually,
that.
He's usually sort of more calm. I mean, the FBI, the head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation has to be a calm and dignified person because people need to trust him, and he needs to be above politics. And so he did get emotional and was waving his arms at one point. And so I just think, you know, you look at him and you wonder where this is all going. I mean, I think, you know, Donald Trump didn't demand his resignation when Trump took office, but you have to think that Trump, or at least his people, are kind of nervous looking at him because he's a bit of a wild card. Mm-hmm. You know, you might think, oh, well, he was trying to help Trump and swing this toward Hillary. But, you know, this investigation as to whether the Trump campaign and the Russians colluded to throw the election to Trump, that's ongoing. And you don't know what Comey's going to do.
Yeah. Tom, what did you think of his performance? Was he convincing?
No. Cheesy. Very cheesy and very unprofessional. He looked like a guy who should have known better. I mean, his rationale was he had two horrible choices: to speak out, mm-hmm. which was bad, but to conceal, which would be catastrophic. And he chose the lesser of the two evils. I don't think he was convincing.
Why would it be catastrophic when the new emails proved to have nothing new in them that was of interest?
His rationale was that he had already said, we've wrapped up this investigation, mm-hmm. and we're not going forward. He said, but then when we had this new information, we had to reopen the investigation, and that would have leaked out, and it would look like we were frauds. I can't imagine a way that Director Comey could have handled this that makes him look worse these days. And so I agree with Linda. He is a political creature, and he knows he's taken a huge hit, even though he has a 10-year appointment. But we will never be able to prove it, but it's quite possible that he might be tougher on the Russian investigation just to show that he's
even-handed.
He is really independent. We will see. I did think it was interesting that he described the Russian attempts to infiltrate our political process as one of the most dangerous things. Russia is the most dangerous enemy in the world that we have these days. He steers clear of saying, were they in league with the with the Trump campaign or Trump emissaries, but he said the Russians are a big problem.
We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Barbara Slavin of El Monitor, and joining me today are Linda Feldman of the Christian Science Monitor and Tom DeFrank of National Journal. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. Linda, was there anything more we learned about the Russia investigation apart from this comment that Russia is the most dangerous actor that we face, or was he very careful not to give any more details?
So my recollection is that he really didn't want to go there, and when you have an ongoing investigation, you really don't want to say anything. To me, one of the interesting bits of political fallout was that President Trump has now returned to questioning whether Russia hacked Democratic servers last year. Again, he's saying it could have been China, it could have been lots of groups. This is one of these stories that sort of meanders around and isn't really moving to a clear conclusion, at least in a political way. And when Trump says these things, yeah. some of us roll our eyes, but his supporters are with him.
Yeah.
And they're believing him, and he's just a fascinating political creature in that he's just so focused on holding on to his supporters and not trying to rise above that or try to bring in more people.
Yeah, he also revived the notion that Obama had somehow tapped his phones again in an interview mm-hmm. that he did with John Dickerson of CBS, even though, as Comey said, there's no evidence of that. But I want to move on. Actually, Tom, you gave us a perfect lead-in by saying, quoting Comey as saying that Russia is the biggest danger that we face. Russia has also produced what it calls a new agreement in Syria. They had a meeting in Kazakhstan, the capital of Kazakhstan, and the Russians and the Turks and the Iranians announced that they were going to set up for so-called de-escalation zones. What do they mean by that? Is this just public relations, given the uproar after the use of chemical weapons by the Syrians? Or is this something, some real effort to sort of tamp down the level of violence in Syria?
I'm guessing, Barbara, that only Vladimir Putin knows the answer to that question. There's certainly a heavy element of political posturing, and it will depend on the definition of. They didn't use the word no-fly zone.
Or safe zone, yeah. De-escalation is a little vague, right, isn't it?
It's hard to know, but it to me, the more interesting piece of this is that the Russians have launched a new diplomatic offensive, hoping to do what the Russians always are hoping to do, which is to gain more respect. The mm-hmm. Russians always, as a culture, mm-hmm. feel like that since the demise of the Tsars, they don't get the kind of respect they deserve around the world. So this is Putin convening a meeting with the Turks and, as you said, the Iranians. And also, let's not forget that he met in recent days with Angela Merkel, Chancellor mm-hmm. Merkel. Mm-hmm. So he is he's into big-time diplomacy, big time. And the subtext is we don't really care what the United States has to say about this. Although Putin and Trump, President Trump, had a phone call mm-hmm. In recent days, and they said, "Well, we'll try to see if we can put together a meeting at the G20 mm-hmm. summit later this year." And so, but Putin is basically sensing that he has some diplomatic room to run here, and he's going to exploit that for all it's worth.
Mm-hmm. Linda, what if anything does this mean for the Syrian people? There were members of the Syrian opposition at this meeting in Astana. There was also, for the first time, a semi-senior American diplomat, the acting assistant mm-hmm. secretary of state who deals with the Middle East, was there as well. But the Syrian opposition members walked out right. of the meeting. I think the feeling on the part of the administration, also judging from a State Department comment, was we'll believe it when we see it if there actually is a diminution. They put out a statement. United States supports any effort that can genuinely de-escalate the violence in Syria, ensure unhindered humanitarian access, and focus on the energy of the defeat of ISIS and other terrorists. So they gave it a sort of, modified mm-hmm. thumbs up.
Right. I mean, if I'm a Syrian person still living in Syria, I'm going to be hopeful but not terribly optimistic. I mean, the State Department was only tangentially involved in this meeting. Of course, they'll support any effort at peace, but there are concerns about Iran's role.
Yes, I found that very odd. There was the State Department seems to do this all the time. There was mm-hmm. kind of a slap at Iran, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but not at the Russians, right. who, after all, are really propping up the Assad regime as much or more as the Iranians.
Right. Well, the bromance seems to be back a little bit. Putin and Trump are talking again,
yeah.
and Trump is sounding again hopeful that they can work together. But the State Department called on Russia to ensure that the Syrian government would stop attacking civilians and opposition forces, but that's never happened. So one can only hope. But there's also fear that because they've sort of set up these de-escalation zones, that countries that are hosting refugees will send them back. Hmm. And that obviously is not a good idea. But
There was also something that I saw suggesting that Americans were not welcome in these zones.
Right.
And that, the statement also said that, this is the American statement, that the opposition must live up to its commitments with Turkey as the guarantor to separate legitimate rebels from designated terrorist groups. So there are a lot of question marks, I think, over whether they're going to be able to actually do this. On the other hand, it's a positive step if the level of violence is decreased and they can get some more humanitarian aid in there, right?
Big ifs, Barbara.
Yeah.
Big ifs, as always.
Big ifs indeed. In terms of the U.S.-Russia relationship, though, I think Tillerson is also going to be meeting with Lavrov mm-hmm. In a short while, mm-hmm. the Russian foreign minister, on the sidelines of an Arctic Circle conference of some sort. So when you say that the bromance is back, there does seem to be a real desire to right. try to pull off something with the Russians.
The Arctic Circle issue is interesting because it's one of the rare elements of U.S.-Russian relations where they can truly, I think, there's no serious conflict there. Hmm. They're not seriously competing in that part of the world. And I think people, Russia experts, are hopeful that this can be kind of a demonstration project, an area that's relatively easy to come to a meeting of the minds and work together in a cooperative way.
We will see. We will see. I want to turn now, Tom, to another story overseas, and one that's really pivotal, I think, for the future of Europe, for Russia's role in the region, and that is the French elections, of course. Emmanuel Macron versus Marine Le Pen. The polls suggest that Macron will have a fairly easy victory, but no one is taking this one for granted.
No, and that's because most of the civilized world or the educated world believed that Britain would never vote to leave the European Union, which it did. That vote set off shockwaves in many capitals, and not all of them within the Eurozone. President Trump has taken some credit for what happened with Brexit, and there's now talk of a Frexit. Now, you're right, Barbara. I mean, the conventional wisdom is that now that the French election for president is down to two candidates, it won't even be close. But I must say I have a very good Democratic political consultant who does many political races on the congressional and senatorial level, and she said, everything I thought I believed about electoral politics went out the window when Trump won. I didn't see that coming, and of course millions of other people didn't see it coming either. So she said, I'm not so sure that Marine Le Pen will not win. Well, if that's true, that would have profound consequences, because she wants France out of the European Union, many things that are scramble the equation in Europe even more than Brexit has done already. So we will know in a few days what happens here. But I'm sure that if she wins, President Trump will be one of the first people, to call her to congratulate her and claim a godfather in such an election.
Yeah, he predicted, didn't he, Linda, after a terrorist attack in the Champs-Élysées, that it would help her in the first round of voting, suggesting that the mood was moving in her direction. But it's an unusual race. The Russians, as I mentioned, have taken a piece of this. They've been campaigning very heavily against Macron, and former President Obama, recorded a message in support of Macron.
I am baffled by that. I mean, he endorsed David Cameron. He strongly favors the EU, endorsed Cameron in before the British election. Let's look at how that worked out.
So, yeah, not so well.
Not so well. But if I had to predict, I would say Macron will win. I mean, the Brexit polling was much, much closer than we're seeing in the French election.
True.
I mean, it's a 20-point gap right now. So maybe it winds up as a 15 or 10-point gap. But I still think it's Macron. But I think we have to also look ahead to the parliamentary elections in June,
right?
Because whoever wins will need the support of the Prime Minister and the National Assembly to really govern. So the question, I think, is how governable will France be after the presidential election and then parliamentary?
And, of course, we have German elections coming up in the fall, although there the choice looks a little less ominous. It's between Angela Merkel and a more straightforward center-left candidate, I believe. Mm-hmm. So without France and Germany, there is no European Union. But if Macron wins resoundingly, that also could send a message to Putin, couldn't it?
Absolutely. And, Macron is an interesting combination of establishment and anti-establishment. Mm-hmm. And he's young. He's served in government, but he's never been elected to office before. Mm-hmm. So he represents, for some, I think, a breath of fresh air, not part of the establishment insider political scene. So he'll have his work cut out for him.
I think it'll be interesting too to see the women's vote for him. he's unusual in that he has a wife who's
25,
more than 20 years older than he is, and of course we're very used to seeing the reverse, as in the case of our president, whose wife is more than 20 years younger than him. But I think a lot of women are going to be very very favorably disposed toward a young man who has the confidence to marry someone so much older.
I agree, Barbara. He's 39. His wife is 64. And rather than feeling it's a liability, he has been out.
He and his wife have been out
in public taking glossy photos of them walking in the park, etc.
Yeah.
And they clearly think it's a plus. And I think you're right about that.
Yes, it's very French.
It is very French.
It's classic.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief of the Christian Science Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski, and our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Acting Director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor. Thanks for listening.